Hi, y'all, and welcome to the Daily's Soundbite. I'm your host, Jen Karami. For the next 15 minutes, I will take you through the important stories of the week. What it means to be so not like the other girls. And a discussion on wellness by the Daily's Wellness section. All to come in the Daily Soundbite.
You're so not like those other girls.
Have you ever been told that? Maybe you've been the one to say it to your lady friend. Or maybe you're a girl and pride yourself on not being like the others. Is this supposed to be a good thing? A compliment? Who are those other girls and why don't we want to be like them? We talked to former podcast editor Imana Ganawan about why this little piece of rhetoric is so pervasive and why it's not necessarily a compliment.
My name is Mana Gunawan, and I'm a writer for The Daily. Like, what do we actually mean when we say that? Because, you know, girls are different, or women everywhere are different. And so what does it mean to generalize something and trying to distance yourself from it as though it's a bad thing?
Can you give me an example of a time that someone has maybe told you you're so not like other girls?
I heard it a lot growing up because I played sports and, like, I like to hang out with guys a lot of the times, and it's like, you know, I've heard it from, like, my friends or my boyfriend at the time. You know, he sometimes says that, or like his friends, and it's like, oh, you're not like most girls. And I, because I feel the same way, like, I would feel some kind of pride about it. And then we were talking about, like, oh, you know, like why do we not like that? Like, what does that mean? And who gets to choose what being like most girls mean? And there's kind of a really subtle negative subtext in it.
I think when people say it, they mean it as a compliment, right? Like, oh, yeah. You're different. You're not like the rest of them.
Okay, but who gets to choose what that means? Because oftentimes that's like men say that to me. And typically it's as a compliment, but like even when I pride myself on being, you know, unlike most women, it's also kind of for the attention of men. And it's like, what does that mean? Like, am I perpetuating this culture that thinks all girls can do is like gossip and be shopaholics and just like backstab each other for boys? You know, like, I used to want to be a fashion, like, journalist. That's how I got into journalism, because I wanted to write for Vogue, and thinking that, oh, maybe I shouldn't do that. Like, at some point, I was like, maybe I shouldn't do that because it's too girly and it's very feminine, and, like, what will people think of me?
I mean, I think that's incredible that, like, that a phrase that you've heard so much growing up can permeate itself to the point where you would turn down a possible career path because you don't want to be, like, these other girls. Like, what would typify, like, the other girls?
Like, I'm a woman, I would consider myself a pretty complex person, and I'm pretty sure, like, all women are like that. Like, there's not one type of woman, as much as it would be easier if there was. Like, there actually isn't, you know? Part of the meaning of, like, of I'm not like most girls is, like, I'm not the media's image of what girls should be, which, you know, well, the media's image of girls or of women are kind of one-sided, and that's fine if you want to distance yourself away from that, but I think it's also important to recognize that that in itself is a made-up image, and the media itself is kind of controlled by, you know, kind of patriarchal forces. And so I think we need to realize that that pits us against each other in this way. Like, let's just say, like, I don't like the system that forces me to not like other girls, you know? Like, I think there's a difference between hating just an abstract kind of group of people and hating trying to dismantle a very real system that, you know, prefers other identities compared to others.
You want to be other in that, like, you don't want to be, like, shallow, and you don't want to be backstabbing and catty. And I think that's what people mean when they say other girls. But when you actually, like, look at people, like you said, I think most people have a lot more like complexity and depth to their personality, and it's just, it seems like a single story to just, you know, write them off as like other girls.
Like, there may be women who are like that, and that even so, that's fine, you know, like that's still their right to be that.
Well, I think a really good point that you brought up is like, you kind of went along with it to please men in a way. And that's so true. And I also know girls that will post on social media or just say straight out, like, I'm not like other girls. It seems like that is directed at men, you know? You're not directing that at like, your girlfriends saying, oh, I'm not like other girls. Like, it's something that you're putting out there because you want men to perceive you in a certain way.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I think that's a huge problem with it, is that so much of the culture that decides who these other girls are, and so much of the culture who decides how you're better, is really controlled by, you know, like the male gaze. Not that I'm saying that all men are bad. I just feel like I have to say that. You know how these conversations go. But I also feel like, you know, if we say that to please men, then that means, like, what does that say about us? Like, what does that say about who controls how we live our lives? Like, even though we're saying this actively, in like a self-empowering kind of way, even though we're saying like, oh, I'm not like other girls as a way of empowering yourself, it's still kind of, I don't think that's the way to empower yourself.
I see it as a warning sign. When I think of someone who's told me, oh, you're so not like other girls, I think of my ex-boyfriend. And I think that was coming from a place where what he really meant was like, you're not like most girls that I've met, or you're not like most girls that have like done me dirty in the past, you know?
And that's totally valid that someone would say that to you. It's like, oh, you're like, maybe other people have been treated me very well, and like, you're not one of those people, and I appreciate that. And that's great, you know, like if you're kinder than other people, you know, that's always a
but it's
a
also positive thing. A warning sign into their personality, because they now see
exactly
women in general as this negative, amorphous group. But that's just simply not true. It's definitely a systemic issue, but I think that there's also things that you can do on a personal level, because it's like we hear this rhetoric every day and we kind of just let it fly under the radar. But, you know, the next time a guy says to you, oh, you're not like other girls, maybe just say back, well, who are other girls? And that kind of makes them think like, oh, like, who am I actually generalizing here?
I think I've been having a little bit of that kind of conversation with some of my guy friends too, which I think is pretty valuable, because that forces them to think about these things as well. And it's not like, yes, it has to start from women, but you know, you can always do more to also talk about this and be like, yeah, who are you generalizing? What does that mean? What's the subtext in that? And like, how, like, and let's realize that that can be harmful to some people.
Part 2, wellness. The wellness section has been around for about a quarter now, and writers have covered everything from hiking, to painting, to eating, to finances. It's sort of a soft science, a holistic approach to maintaining your health so that you can tackle other aspects of life. If you haven't read it, you should definitely take a look. I sat down with Haley and Ellie, who have spearheaded the section, and we ended up having this conversation. We talked about their inspiration for the section, and then we talked about acne and hardship withdrawals, among other things.
I'm Haley Milliken.
And I'm Eleanor Cummins.
I'm the wellness editor.
I'm opinion editor.
Wellness!
Wellness.
we're very well.
So well. Ultimate authorities on wellness. Ellie and Haley.
I've always been really fascinated by kind of health systems and the way that they're shaped by culture, and then also how people are in turn shaped by those kind of larger factors and what that does to their individual like decision-making process. So we kind of talked about having like a health section, but I thought that wellness would be a lot more holistic.
It would have been really nice for me when I was younger to have heard
how to be mentally well from someone who actually experiences it, because I think a lot of the time the people you're hearing you're hearing from about mental wellness and about wellness in general are people who are already well and who are like authority figures in some way on that, but like I'm just UW student. Like, I am trying to manage all of the same things that students at the UW are managing while also maintaining my mental wellness. Like, I'm on medication, and I'm still, like, it still takes a lot of work for me to live my life without, like, spiraling. Like, and there have been quarter, like, I've done hardship withdrawals. Like, we've talked about this. Like, the reason that I like writing this column is because I want, first of all, for people to know that they're not alone, and that, like, someone like me, who, like, I'm fairly successful on campus, I still struggle with it, like, most days. And I don't always follow my own advice. Easier written than
done. Yeah, I mean, like, I definitely think that I've learned a lot from Haley in having conversations with her, and I think that by an extension, you know, as one of her first readers, as editor, I've learned a lot. I think that it's reinforcing a lot of things that I've always believed, but it's, you know, kind of adding nuances that weren't previously there. You know, like, we're all struggling with different things, and just having someone be like, yeah, like, me too, and, you know, like, thinking about it and knowing that people are, like, working through those things.
I really want to write about acne, because no one talks to you about acne. Like, I never had acne when I was, you know, most people have acne, like, in middle school or high school, and then I started getting it, like, a couple months ago. It was, like, bad, like, mm-hmm. hormonal acne. Like, and I feel like a lot of people go through acne, but no one talks about the mental position that it puts you in.
Yeah. Well, because there's stigma against all that. Like, literally, if anything is happening to your physical or mental, like, being that isn't
normative,
the norm, like...
Which isn't even the case, because, it happens to everyone,
and, like, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's,
and
like, an idealized norm.
It is an idealized norm.
Yeah.
And it's the same with mental health, and I think of all of them the same way. Well, and there's so many people, like, that have, like, chronic acne, and that feel so bad about it. Because for some reason we have this idealized picture of what a person should be.
It's honestly the best feeling when you, like, come clean to someone about a health thing and they're like, oh my god, I had that too.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's so true.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, and two, I think...
That's, like, basically the function of this.
Yeah, exactly.
Same!
Yeah, and I think that the acne thing, too, really highlights the idea that physical and emotional well-being are so tied.
So connected.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because the second that... you start, like, physically feeling different, your mind starts racing, and you're like, oh my god, like, what does this mean, and what are the repercussions of this?
This week I'm writing about my personal experience with hardship withdrawals, because I got pneumonia, bronchial pneumonia, for winter quarter, and was, like, out of school for, like, 3 weeks. And I was taking, like, CS. I shouldn't have been taking CS anyway. I was taking it for fun, and I ended up having to drop it, and then I didn't have two drops, so I had to get a hardship withdrawal, and, like, it feels like you can't, like, that if you drop the ball, it's like your life is ruined forever. You know what I mean? And having people know that not only are there other people that are going through the same thing, but that there are ways out of it.
And it's so important for students because it's, like, the first time that you go through anything like that. You know, when you're older,
yeah, exactly.
It's, like, mm-hmm. you have the infrastructure because you've been through some kind of health crisis already and you know how to deal with
or
it.
Or you have people in your life
alone
that have,
as a college
yeah,
student.
Exactly. No, yeah.
So now that you're older and you've been through that, you can handle it the next time.
I just would love there to be, like, I would love to live on a campus where, like, people knew that there were resources, because I feel like the UW does a really good job at, like, being like, look, guys, there are resources, but not really, like, enforcing that or, like, introducing them to ways that they can keep up with those resources. But I think most people don't, like, communicate with their community about, like, the resources that they utilize, because it's embarrassing. Like, I would love to scroll through my Facebook feed and have people be like,
I utilized
this resource, like, it was great.
Yeah.
You know, but
no,
that's
definitely.
Not, that would also get probably annoying, but, so I'll just do that.
People.
I'll just start doing that on my Facebook.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Tune in to the Daily Soundbite at dailyuw.com. You can pick up a new copy of the Daily Summer Edition every Wednesday on newsstands, or just read it online at dailyuw.com. And yes, the Daily is actually a weekly over the summer. I'm Jen Karami. Thanks for listening, and go Dawgs!